Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Neil and Christina Insights Hour. Today we are continuing our discussion on reigning karma, R-A-I-N-I-N-G karma, and taking your calls for on-air reading. So first, want to announce the number, 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. Please press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. And our callers and listeners should follow us on Blog Talk Radio as well as Facebook. We have a few accounts there. Our personal page, Neil and Kristen Baker, whereby you may send us a friend request or follow us, and our two public pages, Neil Baker Psychic and the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Call in number again, 914-338-0164. Do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us, but we do have some time to talk today. So, reigning karma. And I need to adjust the show name because it does not indicate that it's part 2, and we already started on this on Wednesday. So, we were talking about karma and the first layer of karma being the fact that we are all sentenced to death on the planet. But then the deeper intensity of karma may indicate that we have a reigning karma, R-E-I-G-N-I-N-G karma versus a reigning karma. So the reigning, the first example is karma that is in a deep intensity throughout a lifetime versus a maybe shorter period of karma where there's a extreme intensity of karma during that period. So,
yeah, the intensity of the karma that one has in one's life can be, if it can't be specified, it can be measured by how many problems you have. And then you separate, are these problems you caused, which could be still connected to one's karma, or are they problems that you didn't cause that are just coming from out of nowhere, they're just hitting you left and right. The difference between those two scenarios helps to more clearly identify the kind of karma one is dealing with. There's an inward karma and there's an outward karma. If you've committed great acts of offense on your fellow person, then usually your karma is going to come from without. It's hitting you from all different areas, like you're being attacked. If your past lives were such that you caused karma from within and you affected your own self with offenses, then that's going to result more with karma within you.
So like an emotional or mental karma, psychological problems or depression, within the mind rather than
alcohol abuse, right, drug abuse, that will might manifest that suddenly you have certain problems in your body,
physical problems, health problems, things like
severe,
that.
Yeah.
But if it's from the outside, it might be that, you know, you're bullied or attacked violently or otherwise.
Right.
Physically or.
So why is that
subject
important?
To emotional abuse in the home, things like that.
And, you know, I mean, it's important if you're going to spend time trying to analyze your life and you think, you know, is my karma was it self-induced, or is my karma the result of what I did to others? Now, if it's a result of what you did to others, and you're getting attacked left and right, what do you do with that? Well, you try to be understanding to the people who are attacking you. Maybe you can reduce your karma by doing civil service, just like you would with any offense. But we're talking about the offenses of karma. How do you reduce, if you're being attacked left and right by people and things are going wrong, volunteer, help somebody, do something. It might end up actually reducing your karma and resolving your problems. The other thing would be that if you're being attacked from somebody and you need to be, assertive, effective, then do so properly. Don't try to undermine somebody and administer the same kind of drama that you're getting. So if you need to take action and the law in your own hands, or you need to strategize some way to avert the disaster or the problems that you're experiencing from others, do so in a legitimate way, even if it means setting boundaries.
Yeah, but you know, it's not always just one karma or the other karma. Usually people are dealing with a mixture of different karma from different lifetimes. So they're, you know, it's not that you're going to just have mental problems versus people attacking, you know, being attacked from without.
Right.
So
certainly, I mean, the more lifetimes you have, the more.
And then, of course, you can develop, you know, internal problems because of what you experience from the outside. So say you're bullied, example I gave earlier, as a kid, and then develop, you know, into an adult that's, you know, you're traumatized from the abuse, and then you have psychological problems as a result of that. So that's karma from, that's, you know, internal karma that's come from that karma, you know, that's probably past life.
Yeah.
From youth.
Well, you know, I mean, one terminology is karma. Karma itself can become polluted. So when you think of the word pollution, you're thinking of foreign substances being in a natural environment. You know, the oceans are polluted, the skies are polluted, the air is polluted. So you have original substance that is polluted by foreign substances, toxic substances. The same thing happens with karma. You have a life, and it can be polluted by the energies of other lifetimes. And some of them can be very, very subtle in manner. When you get down to understanding the physics or the chemistry of pollution, if you will, more the chemistry of pollution, and you analyze what particles are in the air and you clearly identify where they're coming from, you know, that's a lot different from just looking at the sky and saying, well, it's smoggy today. You could look at your life and say, well, my life is shitty. But if you go and, you know, it's just horrible. But if you go into depth and you study the content of what that shittiness is, if you will, you can understand where it's coming from, just like the sources of pollution. And it's not difficult because there's chakras hold different karma. Like the first is going to hold karma for home and security of living and things like that. The second's going to be a relationship situation. I mean, you can have a secure home, right? Your home's all built and paid for. It's a beautiful home, but you and your spouse, your mate, are fighting like horrible. And people walk by, and maybe there's a murder or a horrible accident. People walk by and go, "No, that was such a lovely home. They were such lovely people. I can't believe this would happen. They were always gracious in the neighborhood." But there is a second chakra dilemma. If you have something regarding a beautiful home, a beautiful setting, a beautiful relationship, and then suddenly the household is attacked by maybe a heart attack, and it's reduced to somebody, or they have a stroke, we're getting more into the fourth chakra element, that the balance is ruined. You see, you can actually entertain yourself if nothing else, and define what chakra you have the most problems in. People who are stage fright, they have terrible speaking communication. they can't talk, they're shut down. Well, that's going to be chakra number five. And then you trace backward, if you're astute enough or insightful enough, you trace backward where this origin came from. First, you use your own history. And then you go deeper and deeper and deeper until you get into the past life journeys. Why there is toxic energy in any particular chakra. And then the intensity of that will be, it's like somebody who has a precancerous thing on their face. It's precancer. It's not cancerous, but it's
the cells are abnormal, so it has to be treated so it doesn't develop into cancer.
Yeah, as opposed to like a stage four cancer, where where the cancer is located, like if it's in the pancreas.
Well, yeah, Alex Trebek.
We're talking about Alex Trebek.
Well, it's interesting because a friend texted me a little meme about him because she watches the show and I watch Jeopardy, so it was upsetting this week. Of course, he's 78 years old, but obviously people live into their 90s and they don't have health issues and they die in their sleep. So it's unfortunate that, you know, he has to deal with a serious illness like pancreatic cancer, which has a very, very poor prognosis. But anyway, it was the thing she sent me was talking about how he's had no scandals in the however many years that he's been on the air, unlike many other stars. So, you know, he's very well respected, and it's similar to Luke Perry, who just died, and we were talking about him on the last show. But Alex Trebek has had a lot of health problems. I believe he had a quadruple bypass like maybe 15 to 20 years ago. And then in December of last year, he had a fall. So he's had some health problems.
He had some tumors on his brain or something.
It was a blood clot on his brain. It was a blood clot. But, you know, unfortunately, they didn't catch the pancreatic cancer at that time. You would think that, you know, going inside the body like that in the brain, they would have done extensive testing because...
You think so. It's a silent killer. I mean, there's no
right.
symptoms.
But pancreatic cancer, I mean, if it's stage four with him,
yeah,
it would... I mean, it's likely in his other organs. So it's just surprising that there was nothing that showed at that time.
He might have had intense back pain. I mean, there are things that finally show up to indicate, but by then it's typically too late.
But in any case with him, my point is that he has, you know, lived a relatively clean life.
Yeah.
You know,
well, you know, that's too the karma. If one is facing dark karma, but they decided in their lifetime to live a noble, distinguished, and ethical, morally ethically lifestyle, and they're really gracious and giving people, no matter when they're taken, they've accumulated enough energy in that lifetime supposedly to say, okay, it's time, and I did the best race I could. I had a friend that died who had turned Christian, and he was renowned in the Christian world, and he studied cults and things like that.
He was like pretty extreme Christian. I mean,
he was pretty
extreme.
Pretty strict at that. But that was his calling. And suddenly at the age of 66, he had cancer.
Well, he had pain. Didn't
he
have pain in his back?
Yeah.
And he went to investigate the pain, and they took an MRI and saw it, like tumors all up his spine. I mean, it had invaded his body totally.
Yeah.
And then what did he live like a few months
after that, and he was gone. But here was a person who devoted his life to the study of the Bible and Christianity and things like this, and he was a good person. And his mentor, his superior, said, "You know, you did well, good work. You did the work."
Who also had cancer and beat it.
He also had cancer and beat it. So you don't. I mean, death. We are one total living unit, but every moment of any given day, our lives are fragile. We can be taken. We can hear bad news. We can be hit with a car. Life is very fragile. So the idea is not how long we're going to live, but what kind of life we live.
Yeah, the quality of life rather than so the length, karma, because you can have a really long life and bad quality of life.
Oh yeah, you can die in your deep 90s in jail being a convict with, you know, 10 life sentences on you and live to be an ripe old age. Charles Manson lived to be kind of pretty an old guy, but, you know, with his, you know, where is his karma going after this? Who knows? But the idea is that the length of one's lifetime is important, and we all want to have, most of us want to have a long life. But what's most intense about the energy of karma is how we live that life. And so we have to take every day, more or less, the scripture says every hair on our head is measured and known. So every day that we live is calculated and factored into the overall energy of karma, of how, what's going to happen to our soul. What is the imprint? The imprint is smudged, dirty, criminal. The body will decay, but now the soul is left with the energy of the body, and the soul moves into the astral realm, and now the soul is evaluated in terms of the content and the measurement of one's activities on the planet in the former lifetime. And, you know, I guess we're not addressing atheists or people who don't believe in...
Well, yeah, actually, that came to mind.
Yeah, this,
you know, and not even people
that's not
that,
our audience.
No, no, but it's actually, I wasn't thinking about atheists, but I'm just recalling certain clients that have said things like, oh, well, you know, the universe is so vast. I don't believe in karma. I mean, I think you really, it's up to you what happens once you die. You do where you go. And there's a lot of people in the spiritual community that think, you know, I'm choosing to come down to the planet. I'm choosing to have these experiences. I choose this. I choose my parents. I mean, you can get into this whole discussion, which is not really like we're all not our own free agents and little, you know, gods in our own universe.
We're not really in charge of our souls to the extent of the destiny of our souls. But I can only say from my experience in delving into this phenomena, that there's something called karmic choice. And what happens is when you die, you have karmic decisions you can make in terms of serving that time.
Right, in terms of what is offered to you by the higher,
yeah,
you know, people, or not people, what am I saying? Energies that have more control over,
yeah,
your destiny.
It'd be like someone saying, well, you know, you have to do civil service. So you want to go into the armed services? Do you want to go into the Peace Corps? Do you want to volunteer for some civic activity? Do you want to be a fireman? You know, you have different choices in terms of how you serve. And when sometimes there are instances where the soul is given a karmic choice as to how they want to serve off their karma. So I would say that in my element of thinking, that there are some attitudes of choice that one can make in terms of karma, but I guess the argument is, well, I don't believe in any of that at all. You die and then you go wherever you want. Well, okay, that's what you believe. But I would say to the same individual, well, you can be on the planet and do whatever damn thing you want. Yeah, go rob a bank. Go abuse a child. You go rob that house. Yeah, you have the freedom. You can do whatever you want. Maybe you will get caught. Maybe you won't. But you're committing a criminal act. And consequently, there are consequences. And so for the person who raises the argument that I just believe that the soul either dissipates or goes into the universe and becomes dust, or you just go into some vast energy field, another planet, another realm, fine. I'm not going to argue the point, but it's still my estimation as a person with a brain that I would say to the same person, if you want to be a criminal, fine. Yeah, you have the
right. Yeah, but let's not even talk about the criminal aspect, because there's something that's coming to mind that you've mentioned to me, which I don't know if I should even be mentioning this on the radio, but like, so people sometimes do have a choice. And so, you know, there are people that may want to experience being very beautiful on the planet. We've talked about this. People that are really strikingly beautiful sometimes choose to come down and experience that experience. But they'll come back. I mean, they know they're going to come back, but living that life of being, you know, someone who's extremely attractive.
There are people who say, I don't care, you know, wine, dine, admire.
Be famous, or for whatever reason. It may be not imbued with any sense of talent. I mean, look, you know, there are certain people in the world that are very famous and that aren't very talented, you know, society people. And they may have chosen to come down and experience that.
Right. And there's no crime in the worship of beauty.
And it's not that everybody that is beautiful is, you know, is coming back.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying at all.
Well, we're entitled to have our interests and our hobbies and our pursuits and our beliefs, even if it is in the design of beauty or the architect of the body. I mean, we can just live a life of pleasure, but that's fine. But the big manner here, the big idea is about being transcendent and getting into the attitude of what is beyond the body. How do we penetrate and analyze the soul, the energy of spirit, and the discussion of what is beyond the planet, and how do we enter that realm with some sense of dignity and grace and advancement?
Right. So perhaps and perhaps those who choose that kind of karma, which is, you know, more or less a good karma, I guess, because you know, one's experiences are going to be more positive than if you come into the planet looking hideous. But that person may, in the course of a lifetime, become deeper, you know, deeper on a spiritual level, deeper on an intellectual level than originally, you know, they came into the body.
Yeah.
In terms of there would be aptitude there to develop that. But, you know, someone who's coming in for a solely vain purpose may lead a vain life from birth to death, versus someone who actually, you know, attempts to expand one's consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, when you look at the historical text as opposed to maybe the attempt to dramatize in a movie, and you look at the elephant and his terrible karma that he came in with, but the precious soul that was within him, now you're looking at the adversity, the great dynamic diversity.
Or dichotomy, a dichotomy.
Of the soul and the body. And then ultimately, his own desire to want to sleep like a normal human being as he advanced forward and experienced different things cost him his life. And he finally suffocated because the position he was laying in, he knew it would kill him. But he wanted to have one night of experience.
So depressing.
According to the movie and some aspects of his biography. But here was a man who, oh my God, can you imagine? I mean, a good history lesson on the soul to look into. I forget his name, John or something. I forget his former
name. Joseph Merrick, actually, is his name.
Joseph Merrick.
And he was born.
And was a J.
Well, you were close. 8-8. Oh, it's so sad.
No.
8-5-1862. It's interesting because he has 22 and is, you know, when you add the month, day, and century. So there's that 11 factor.
Right. And
but he was a 30 equals 3, my master number.
Yeah.
So I'm the elephant woman.
Yeah. Pack your trunks. So now there's something.
And he died 3 years. He had died at 27.
Yeah, he did. Well, there's something that is a good illustration of how one comes into the world with this karma. And we're defining this medical condition, this human body condition that he had, as we're deciding to factor in karma. And then the inside was this gentle human being and poetic, intelligent, but then making the decision to end his life by sacrificing his life to the sense of having pleasure and sleep and sleeping normal.
Like, is that really what happens? Is that really what happens?
I mean,
I haven't seen the movie.
Depicts it that way. I'm sure that I've read it briefly, a little bit about his biography, but you know, you don't know where the end truth is. I mean, you have to account for third hand narration. Third person narration, so to speak. You know, I don't think there might be some papers or writing he did, but as it stands, we have to take this as being the facts of his life. And the result of that being that he finally took his life. We had a client on the radio who, from a medical situation that was botched up, became crippled. And she would call our show and constantly bring up the idea of suicide. What's she going to do with her life? Is she going to get some kind of payback from the doctor? She's going to sue the doctor. Anyways, after all of the misery she went through, we learned that she deliberately committed suicide.
That's enough. We're supposed to talk about that, huh? But that's okay. Anyway, okay.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that was public information. We didn't
mention
share
anybody's name.
No, okay. But yeah, she did. Yeah.
We didn't mention anybody's
which
name.
Was very upsetting. It was interesting because I discovered this online because I
didn't
was
know
so.
That. I didn't know we were, but we did mention.
Well,
it.
I mean, no one said not to talk about it, and it. I mean,
well,
you know,
it,
no one told us not
you know,
to.
Mary,
but.
Sue, Linda, Glorious, any of the above
Glorious.
I'm talking about. Yeah.
Glorious. Who's Glorious?
Glorious.
What kind of name is that?
Glorious was the sister of Gloria.
I think it was the brother.
It was
Glorious
sister,
would be the
so
brother.
Glorious was the sister. Gloria and Glenetta were three sisters that lived in a shoe. So we were talking referring to one of those three. But
very sad.
Well, yeah.
Aside from that example, or compared to that example, the elephant man dying in his sleep. Because he was trying to get some pleasure of sleeping in a certain position. That's questionable suicide. I mean, I would say that would lean toward just trying to get a good night's sleep rather than a real deliberate attempt at taking his own life. I mean, it's very sad. It's making me very sad talking about this.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, there might. He
versus,
might
I cannot suffer anymore. I'm going to take a bottle of pills and kill myself.
Well,
that's different.
The idea that he might have known that position would ultimately crush his lungs and he would suffocate is one thing, but to want to experience. He wanted to experience life. He didn't want to experience death. He wanted
that's
to
what I'm
experience
saying.
Life. So we don't really know
if
every
that's
detail
the case.
Of his mind.
If that's the case, then it wasn't to me a deliberate attempt to take his life. He wanted to experience, you know, what everybody experiences, every normal person experiences when they're sleeping. Which
but,
is
you
how
know,
could you blame
I mean,
him?
When we get into the idea. Someone wants to experience flight, and so
they just
jump
off
from
a building.
You
know? I
know, as opposed to someone, what happens to 9/11 when the building's burning, and you're either going to burn to death or you jump to your death? That's not really suicide.
No,
it's desperation that leads to
panic.
One's death. But
you would have died anyway.
And look at that.
If you're on like the 30th. Fifth floor or something, there's no chance of escape.
Right. And it's a symbol of, it is still a symbol of karma. that incident and all those people that were in that.
Well, yeah, and that's a tribal. They all had a tribal karma, obviously. And
that's our interpretation that when masses of people die, like under the Titanic, 9/11, that it comes from a tribal energy of a lot of collected souls are regrouping into a situation. Now, people may say, oh, bullshit, that is the most ridiculous, you know. And that, it's an interpretation, but it's expressed with sincerity because you have to, I mean, randomly, when a lot of people die in a massacre or total disaster, an accident, you have to, you most of us just gasp and say, why? And we try to figure it out. And some of us just look at the logistics and say, well, they're all there, this happened, and certain people died.
Yeah, but we all experience tribal karma, you know, whether it's from a mass incident like 9/11, or if it's just living in a neighborhood. So, you know, living in a neighborhood, you're surrounded by usually people that you have tribal karma with.
Yeah, they're
in the neighborhood. So, you know, you can have an incident in the neighborhood, you know, strife with the neighbors, or, you know, something that happens, you know, to somebody, or, you know, a police incident in the neighborhood. And that's tribal karma, more diluted than something like, you know, the Holocaust.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously, the more numbers you have, the more you have to expand your explanation of interactions and reasoning about what happens.
I'm sorry, can you say that?
The more people there are
the
in
more,
a given situation, it provides a broader explanation about the human experience and human interaction. I mean, if you have somebody who lives a solitary life, you know, you think of that great novel, Robinson Crusoe. But ultimately, he's stranded, and he's using all of his wits about him, and maybe that's karma about being stranded on an island. But then, lo and behold, comes Friday, and the native that he rescues from a cannibalistic tribe, or a very savage tribe, and he recreates the English society on the island. Then Friday becomes his servant, however beloved. And ultimately, they're both rescued, but they form a bond. And whenever we have a bond with somebody else, we're getting into a tribal energy. There is probably a firm definition. I forget what the number of a tribe is. It's 7 or 14. But there is a significant number that's defined as the number of a tribe. I can't recall the
You're talking.
Yeah. But when we have a coupling of energy, wherever two or three are gathered together, we have a sort of a communion of minds. We have a combination of energy. And now karma doesn't just become a solitary thing. It becomes interactive. So karma is sometimes produced because of our interaction with others, not just within ourselves. And when that becomes the situation, then we get into a broader stage as time goes on with how karma involves and envelops several different factors, not just a solitary factor. There's always several factors. Is a doctor botched up? Somebody got me hooked on cocaine. There's always something that ignites in this interactionary process that begins the
right without negating personal responsibility of, you know, becoming addicted to a substance. You're the interaction with another individual can prompt it, so that can be traced to a past life
situation.
I mean, much of the time.
And when we get into the tragedy,
I can't find the answer about this.
Like, you know, this movie came out about Michael Jackson.
Oh.
And the accusations against Michael Jackson, which may be true, maybe not be true.
Well, we watched the movie.
We
did watch the movie.
And, you know, you get to the idea that you know, where is the who is the perpetrator? Where does it begin, and what responsibility does one take?
Well,
and how deep a crime is child molestation, and how it results in further acts of abuse, because it perpetuates a cycle that starts to affect not one, two, three, four, and then not to mention the families.
Right. So the thing that I would have to say about watching that film, which I kind of made a decision after watching the film, but it was in two parts. So I think the scene in theater, it's like 4 hours, but it was aired on HBO two different nights. So the first night I was undecided. The second night I made a decision. But well, you have a funny look on your face.
No, I was thinking of the last 4 hour movie I saw in the theater, I think it was The Ten Commandments or Ben-Hur.
You look exhausted.
David Lean. Well, listening to tell you the truth, listening to 4 hours about the evolving factors of this abuse, it was a little bit tiring.
No, I was much more interested in documentary than you were.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But anyway, the thing that struck me the most, especially after the first night where I was still undecided on whether the abuse had occurred, because I flip-flopped in the past however many years that abuse accusations have been, you know, public about Michael Jackson for various reasons. And one reason I thought, well, God, I don't think he did it, was because that Wade Robson came out and many years back, one of the accusers in the movie, and stated that he was not abused by Michael Jackson. I thought this kid was around Michael Jackson so much and spent nights and nights and nights with him, and he's stating he wasn't abused. You know, I'm inclined to believe him. And now he's saying, well, I was abused, so on and so forth. But what struck me is the most significant thing is how the family units were disrupted by Michael Jackson, whether or not you believe he abused the kids or not, the way he wedged himself between these children and the parents. That was the psychological manipulation, which you cannot deny that there was psychological manipulation. I mean, these are facts. You know, one of the kids was, I don't want to give too many details about the movie. One of the kids was, they came to visit Michael Jackson at Neverland Ranch from Australia. And the kid, they decide to leave the child with him while they go on their trip to the Grand Canyon, the 7-year-old kid. I mean, to me, an adult asking, you know, a family to leave their child when they're on a family vacation together, I mean, what?
It seems very irresponsible.
Irresponsible, but, and very selfish on Michael Jackson's part that he would break up a family vacation. And of course, the child was eager to stay with him, and he did. And the parents left the kid. I mean, what do you, the parents,
yeah, you know,
huh?
I mean, you know,
who leaves their kid with an adult man that
right,
they don't know,
right,
even if he's a megastar.
And that gets a little bit sloppy.
And then it gets more deep, you know, that it gets more deep. I'm not going to give too many details about the movie.
Yeah, I guess a little bit foggy, but you know, when it, so he's a big national figure, he's a celebrity, he's got Neverland, you know, there's no history yet of child abuse. And but well, let's look at the other side. An uncle wants to take his nephew on a fishing trip.
Well,
and the brother and his wife said, oh, that's fine, he's an uncle. And the uncle molests the nephew. It happens hundreds of times.
Right, but
so you don't. It,
and obviously trusting an uncle is one thing. I mean, he's a family member. So it's I would say there's more forgiveness that you can bestow on the parents for letting a child go with a family member. But I think that, you know, allowing a child to spend so many hours alone with somebody who you don't know is not.
Well, yeah,
and with the priest, yeah, that happens.
You can argue that case.
Yeah.
I think what we have to get back to is the idea of karma and the intensity of it. But the word that I use in terms of karma and the intensity is awareness. I think that the more one is aware and consciously alert and taking full responsibility is paramount to karma. You have your 4-year-old outside playing in the front yard, and the phone rings, and you run into the house to answer the phone, because you're
distracted.
Spontaneously you go there and you answer the phone and you're talking for about a minute and you go, I got to get outside. My child is out there. I'll talk to you later. You run outside and the child is hit by a car or you can't find the child anywhere. You know, I think it's important to be totally alert, not suffocating, not so where you stifle someone's life and breath and sense of discovery and freedom, but there is a fine tuning in the idea of being aware. And if you're aware, you've eliminated, if you're aware on a consciously responsible level, you can eliminate or even distract karma, or even avoid it.
Right. Well, but then again, we get into the idea of karmic destiny. And like in the case of these children, I mean, with Michael Jackson, maybe they were born into families with parents who were going to be distracted because they were fulfilling some kind of karma that they had to go through. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, how do you analyze each given situation?
Well, I remember as a child, I was about 7, and my mom, we went to the beach, and my mom decided to swim out to the buoy. And I had just basically learned how to swim. And like an idiot, I started to follow her. And halfway to the buoy, because they're pretty far out there, and I'm only 7, I say to her, I can't make it. And she was swimming on her back and blowing bubbles and all that and saying, oh, well, then sink. You know how to swim. Just swim, hit the buoy and come back. And I still remember that to this day. Now, thank God I made it. There,
yeah,
back.
Because the undertow, my goodness.
But I was an adult. But I, you know, and that wasn't my mom's natural behavior, but it stuck out in my mind at that moment. Maybe she had 2 glasses of wine or something. I don't know. But it stuck out in my moment at that time.
Mine.
You're not protecting me and I can sink. I can drown. And I was scared. Now, what if I had drowned? What, you know, you get to the point at, or, you know, before I learned how to swim, we went to this guy's house. And he was throwing people in the pool, whether they could learn to swim or not. He was picking them up and throwing them in the pool. And I said, and he picked me up, and my mom jumped and said, my son can't swim. And he goes, well, he's going to learn now. And he threw me into the deep end.
I got thrown into the pool by a swim instructor once. I remember that.
It's toughness,
not,
you know?
I don't like that approach. Didn't work with me very well.
No, that's not the way.
I don't think so.
But, you know, you get... Here again is the element of when you get into the euphoria of a moment, and you forget to be responsible. You forget to be aware.
And your mother, obviously, I mean, maybe in that case, not obviously, but perhaps in her mind she was trying to teach you a lesson of, you know, you sink or swim, you know, literally.
I had one client many, many years ago, who came to me in a wheelchair. It was a woman. And, you know, I was just talking to her, and I saw this flash of water and a fall. And I said to her, I see you falling in water. And she said, well, you got it. And I said, what did I get? She said, I was sitting on a pier. No, it was a cliff, a mountain cliff. And we were all daring one another to jump into the lake underneath the cliff, the pond. And I was sitting on the edge, and my girlfriend, I was debating, and my girlfriend pushed me.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Because you haven't told me the story, and I'm just sorry to interrupt real quick. Something like that happened recently in the news. Do you remember? No, there was a girl whose friends pushed her off a cliff, and she had her, I think, I don't know, some injury, serious injury, but she didn't die, and she wasn't paralyzed. This girl was not,
but
I didn't know that
happened. Yeah, and that tragic, you know, thinking that in the moment you're going to be funny And then look what happens. I had another guy come in a wheelchair who, my God, was in a mess. He couldn't talk. He was spastic. He was in a wheelchair. And what he did, he took, I don't know, he sniffed glue or something. He'd had bad LSD.
Well,
he did something and it put him in this state.
Probably. I don't imagine LSD would do that. Inhalants would do that to your brain.
And it was bad. And it put him in
LSD might make you go crazy, but like a sniffing something like, or inhaling something can cause brain damage.
Something like what it was. And now, because he didn't have anybody in his life, his girlfriend was now taking care of him. But this meant everything, bodily functions, everything. And he was completely imprisoned by his wheelchair. And he really couldn't talk. He would like that and be in total spastic motion all the time. But we could hear. And when I would say something, he would go sometimes into hysterics. And I said to his girlfriend, what's wrong? She said, well, he's trying to acknowledge that he agrees with you. But my God, looking at the display of his bodily movements, I thought he was having an attack. And terrible, terrible stuff. So, you know, and then when they left, I was haunted by the idea of the karma. We discussed it a little bit, and he was very open to listening to it. But, you know, here was karma produced by his own action.
Right, but with the girl that was pushed off a cliff, I mean, that wasn't. I mean, it was completely outside of herself. So, I mean, in that case, did she have a relationship with the woman who did it? Did you?
They were just friends. They were groups of friends.
No, afterward.
Oh, I don't think so. I think they separated.
And was there, do you remember anything about the interaction of the birth dates?
I can't recall that. This was probably 20 years ago, maybe longer. So I don't recall all of that. And I've done hundreds of thousands of readings. I can't recall, but I do recall some of the facts there about the impact of it and how the journey between these two individuals didn't just start here. It started on a karmic level way back in time. Now, what if we look at the karmic dynamic of, well, was she getting her comeuppance on a karmic level of interpretation? Was she getting what she formerly did to the other and it was a retribution? Maybe. I mean, there is eye tooth for tooth philosophy. I mean, you could say that
in the Bible.
If you decide to go into the element of a karmic interpretation, or was it just someone being stupid and not meaning to do it, and then forever? Same thing with these couples that go to the Yosemite, they go to the edge of a cliff and they want to take a selfie
and then they fall off the cliff. Well, that's stupidity. I mean, who does that? I mean, that's stupid.
It's stupid.
Let's not take pictures of ourselves anyway. I mean, you know, the obsession of doing that
people
it's
like to take photographs of themselves,
you know,
in dangerous situations. But
or
then
period.
Again, if we apply the word karma to our discussion, then we have to consider, is everything karma? Is that what the whole world is? Well, maybe there is elements of free choice because we have that too. But I have learned in my 60 plus years to not underestimate this concept of what the noun is karma, the verb is karma. I don't underestimate, it's just a word, but it represents something much deeper about the precariousness of life.
Well, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
And how involuntarily or voluntarily we are under something much more powerful than what we might otherwise consider.
Right, in our own will.
In our own
willpower. Yeah, and the other thing I was going to say is that, you know, had this woman, I mean, the one who was pushed off a cliff, been a client prior to the event that caused her to be paralyzed, you know, you may have advised her to separate from this woman. I mean, you know, there could have been likely a vision of this event happening, or you know, perhaps the woman would have asked about this friend, something. There may have been a warning.
Yeah, that's karma too. I mean, people have come for readings and I have said, don't go on this plane and there was an accident, or don't go on this motorcycle and there was an accident and they didn't, and or go to the doctor, you have something, and they had something. So yeah, the advantages of sometimes of doing a reading is you can avoid something, whether you hear it or not, listen to it or not, adhere to it or not. But sometimes, I mean, Nancy Reagan was known to call
obsessed
her own
with astrologist
psychic
or psychic
all
she
the time.
An astrology, I think.
Yeah. And she would not make any moves without consulting her astrologer on whether it was going to be safe or not. And so she had that element going.
Yeah, just really quickly, I want to mention, because we have like 3 minutes left, by the way, we're almost done. But I wanted to mention something that relates to the story about being pushed. Another news article, and it was like maybe 4 years ago, about a bridal party. This woman was getting ready to get married and one of her bridesmaids pushed her into the pool, which is much more benign than pushing someone off a cliff, but the woman became paralyzed because of it too.
No.
You know, and you know, they've had a difficult relationship since, of course, because the woman, I believe, is called quadriplegic.
Yeah,
from
I mean,
something it, you think, you know, is just horseplay, you know, rough
you
housing.
Think it's horseplay, but you've got to, I mean, it's that's life is fragile. Life is fragile, and we can have all kinds of accidents that occur. We're not thinking clearly. I mean, you know, when we get, and you know, the idea of horseplay, why, you know, why not pig play? Why not dog play? Horseplay comes from the idea that the element of horseplay has to do with a lot with competition. And a lot of the earlier battles that we fought, the first animal that we introduced to battle was the horse. There were some elements of elephants at some point, but I think the horse was really the first animal that humankind used in the form of battle.
Sport. And
as opposed to sometimes it was dogs or mongrels or something like that. So the horseplay became an element that in the play you will of battle, you can die. So when we have horseplay, we're also talking about the connection between humans, animals, and an absolute responsibility.
God, and when you think of all the horses that died in battle, my God.
Yeah.
Because that's how they used to fight.
Oh, yeah, World War I, it was tragic.
Terrible.
Not to mention the earlier wars.
Okay, we're out of time, so we will be back on the air on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, and have a new story. Hopefully we'll be speaking with you then. Have a great weekend.